Greetings, we're technically a conversation, a podcast for curious people by curious people.
Every week, we take turns presenting a new topic, and the other host has no idea what the topic will be.
We strive to educate in a way that's loose and fun. Our topics are all over the place, from light and funny to dark and sometimes spooky.
Some of the topics we've covered include urban legends, civil rights activists, vampires, pop culture icons, the supernatural and occult, spies and espionage, science and astronomy, and other weird and random things.
If any of these topics interest you, give our podcast a shot. Listen and subscribe at technicallyaconversation.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. Parental advisory, we might use strong language.
Welcome to the Superhero Cinephiles podcast. Today, we've got a really interesting show. A few months back, you may remember, we didn't cover a movie or a TV show, but we covered a topic talking about superhero politics. And today, we're going to be doing another type of topic-based episode because I recently came into contact with a romance author who's also a fan of superhero movies. So I thought this would be a really interesting topic to talk about, and we'll be talking about the idea of romance and superheroes and all of that stuff that's kind of connected with that. And that is YM Nelson. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How about you, Perry?
I'm doing good. Well, thanks for agreeing to come onto the show and for agreeing to come onto this topic that just kind of came to me off the top of my head when we were discussing
stuff. I love it.
Before we jump into the topic, though, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
All right, great. Hi, everybody. I'm YM Nelson. I'm a contemporary romance and romantic women's fiction author. I also created and I host the Nerdy Romantics podcast. It is a reader entertainment based focused podcast. And it really started out of my love of nerd pop culture. I'm going to put that in quotes because I don't know if that's like a real thing or if I'm
it's
just
a real thing.
That up.
No, okay, it's a good. Real thing. You're
great.
Good.
I'm so happy. So I love nerd pop culture, but I also love stories. And so I just wanted to kind of talk about that at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that's why I created the podcast. I am a diehard, I'm going to say TNG and thereafter Trekkie. I have love for the OG Star Trek, but I haven't watched a lot of those episodes. But as far as superhero goes, I grew up on the X-Men cartoon.
Yeah, same here.
And yeah, and there was also a cartoon out when I was a kid called Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
right? And I know, I'm thinking that's not from an actual comic book. They made that for TV and then they did the comic book after?
Yeah. Well, kind of. Yeah. So the show was, it was actually originally supposed to be the Human Torch in it, but because of rights issues, they couldn't get him. So they created Firestar for the show. And then later she got
my favorite character, by the way.
And then she, oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
And then later she got introduced in the comics. I think in New Mutants or X-Men, and then she became a member of the New Warriors and later the Avengers, and I think now she's with the X-Men. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% up to date on what she's been up to lately, but they didn't necessarily have like an Amazing Friends comic book, but they've done kind of like callbacks to it in the comic books. The Ultimate Spider-Man comic, they had this period where like you had Iceman and Firestar in it for a brief period, and they've done a few other like little callbacks to it here and there.
Oh, that's cool. That is so cool. I will say for your audience, my audience kind of knows that I'm not a comic book reader, but I consider comic books like canon. If there were no comic books, then we wouldn't have all these amazing films. So, you know, there are times when I'm watching those films and watching the TV shows And I feel like I just have to go and research. I have to go and find out, was this in the comic book? Mm-hmm. What was this like? Did this really happen? And so I'm kind of a little bit nerdy like that. But yeah, a little bit more about me. I pretty much have been writing since I was 12. And so I've been writing romance and love story. Well, really love stories since I was 12. And I've also had this kind of nerd bent a little bit, and they did not combine until, like, you know, kind of recently, when a high school friend of mine wrote a fantasy romance series called the Seodrassian Chronicles. Mm-hmm. And she's got two books out of it now. Her name is Bethany DeVores, by the way. And when she was writing those books, she had her heroine of those books be a gamer. That's mm-hmm. like what she did as like her job. She was a gamer. And I was like, this is really cool. I think I need to kind of mesh my passions a little bit here. And so, you know, since then, I found there's really like a whole subgenre of geek romance out mm-hmm. there. And, you know, they're doing everything from gaming to talking about superheroes to talking about just geeking out on TV, old TV shows, TV culture, things like that. And so I found my happy place. So mm-hmm. here I am.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Because traditionally, and you probably felt this too growing up, that I did too, is that there's like this separation between the geek stuff and the romance stuff.
Yes.
And never the twain shall meet is kind of right. like what we've always been led to believe. But in the past few years, I've also noticed this increasing like union of the two. I think we could probably credit, if I was going to find something to actually credit it, I think you could probably look at stuff like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the Vampire Diaries, and that exactly. whole paranormal romance thing is kind of like bridge the gap between those two.
That's what did it. I think that's what did it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but it's funny when you think about it, because you go back to even the earliest superhero stories, there's always been romance so heavily baked.
Of course.
I mean, Stan Lee and Chris Claremont, when they were writing their comics, they heavily based it on soap operas. So
I did not know that.
Oh, I mean, that's probably why you were attracted to the X-Men in the first place, was all the soap opera dynamics.
Oh yes, yes, yeah. It's total soap opera dynamics. Yeah,
it is. It's in, and Stan Lee's Spider-Man was the same thing. It was soap opera with occasional superheroes thrown in. And had all this stuff into it. Yeah, yeah. So it's always just been so heavily baked into the concept, and yet it's still something that people are just now starting to realize. And it's kind of funny when you think about it that way.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. But I'm glad people are starting to think about it that mm-hmm. way, because, you know, it's just a cool place to be. At least for me it is.
And about I didn't look too much into your publishing work, sorry about that, but are you independently published or traditionally?
Right now, I'm looking towards doing self-publishing. I haven't put anything out. My debut novel right now is in a couple of contests right now, so it hasn't actually been published. So that's why I would probably say I'm not mm-hmm. really sure if I'm going to independent or trad, but my bent is towards independent publishing. And I did self-publish a short story series. You know, and I like that. I kind of like that avenue. Mm-hmm. So if it doesn't get picked up traditionally, it will be self-published.
Yeah, I've been self-publishing for over 10 years now, so I definitely know what that's like. I think the reason I bring that up is because I think that's another place where a lot of this recognition has come from. Because in the traditional world, you know, you've got this idea of we have to hit the broadest possible demographic, so we can't get mm-hmm. too niche, whereas self-publishers, we can afford to be more niche with stuff, because we don't have to meet the big margins that the bigger publishers have to meet.
Exactly. And that's where you find all the, to me, and that's kind of where you find that whole nexus of nerd pop culture and romance. Absolutely, me, that's where a lot of those good authors, or they at least started indie, even if they didn't completely stay indie, they at least started indie.
Right.
You know, so yeah. And it's just like you said, it's because we could just do more.
Yeah. We don't have to worry
about anybody or exactly. ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah. That's one of the nice things about it. But so we're talking about superhero romance, and obviously, you know, there's always that question of the superhero and their love interest, right? Superman has Lois Lane, Spider-Man has Mary Jane, Batman has whoever at the time. It's always been a little bit
right.
Yeah. But there's always been like some sort of love interest character, like all the way back to the original Superman comics. So first thing I want to talk about is, what are some of your favorite superhero romances from the, because I know you're mostly familiar with just the movies and the TV show. What are some of your favorites, the ones that you think really stand out?
For me, my favorite growing up was the whole Rogue Gambit combination from X-Men. You know, I just love their whole dynamic. If I'm looking back at it now, I would probably say it was kind of a friends to lovers kind of thing going on there. You know, as far as the comic, it didn't get very far because their romance necessarily didn't get, as far as the cartoon, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't get very far because they're secondary characters on the cartoon, right? So, but you know, you kind of see it happening, and it's always kind of made me wonder in the comic, did they really like get together? Did they get married? What happened there? But I just love them together. That's always been kind of my favorite.
They finally officially got married a few years ago.
I'm so happy.
Yeah. And and she finally ended up getting control of her powers and all that stuff. So that happened a few years back. They went back and forth a few times. There was like on again, off again periods, obviously. And then finally a few years ago, it just kind of like they settled everything and then got together permanently. So they had their happily ever after. In fact, they had they had their own series together for a time. At first it was called Rogue and Gambit, and then after they got married, it was called Mr. and Mrs. X was the name of the title.
I love it. I'm geeking out right now. That is so awesome. I love that. And I guess what I will say for now my and this is really just totally recently, because I just watched the Batman. We did a review on my podcast. That is not out yet at this recording, but I love, and I've always kind of loved this, but I especially love the way that it's done in the Batman, is the whole Batman, Catwoman, you know, kind of dynamic. Batman, Selina Kyle kind of dynamic is really what they have going on, because she's not officially Catwoman there, but you know.
She basically is, though.
She basically is. Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Kept calling her Selina, and I was like, just call her Catwoman. Oh my gosh. You know, it was just getting on my nerves. But I love that dynamic in that particular movie because of the layers. And to me, this is where I think you know, comic books and where romance really meet is because they're very much character driven.
Right.
It's all about character. And yes, there's a lot of cool action adventure stuff. There's, you know, other plot stuff in romance that happens. But it's really character driven. And that's kind of what you've been, as a romance author, what you've been told all along is to write in a series. And part of the whole series thing is because people want to see these characters again. It's not necessarily because they want to see them do X and Y and Z and all that kind of stuff, but it's because they fall in love with these characters. And for me, what happened in the Batman that I have not seen in any other Batman movie, is the fact that they had layers. You know, they had very complex layers. And you see this a lot with Batman, but you don't necessarily see it with Catwoman. She's just this sultry, slinky person that
right.
that's going around, and she's a cat burglar, and she has two dimensions in a lot of things, but you know that that's not really just what she is. She has layers, she has depth, she has backstory, and you start to see that in the Batman, and that is what made me really love the whole electricity of them together, is because they're foils of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Batman is this complex character, he's going through a lot of things, and it's exacerbated by the fact that he's got these very different personalities. As Batman, he is one thing, and as Bruce Wayne, he's another thing, but they fight, and those two personalities kind of fight each other at times.
Right.
And, you know, you see that whole complexity happen there, but you also see it on the other side with Selina. You have, you know, she wants to, you know, fight the good fight, but she doesn't want to fight it in a good way necessarily. She's like, okay, we're not going to do this the way you want to do it, you know? And so that whole dynamic and that attraction is just, it's just magnified, and it's delicious to watch.
Yeah. I mean, also Zoe Kravitz, I mean, my God, I will watch that actress do anything. She's amazing.
Right? Oh my gosh. She's totally amazing.
Did you see her in she did the High Fidelity reboot series on Hulu?
Yes!
She was amazing in that. Like, I mean, when I heard about that, I'm like, really? You're remaking High Fidelity? Okay. But I gave it a chance, and oh my God, I wish that show got another season, because she was amazing.
I know. I was talking about that with my co-host after we stopped recording. We were like, you know, we talked a little bit about it on the podcast, but then we, you know, we were talking mm-hmm. forever. So, you know, after that, we talked about, you know, what she's done. And then there's, you know, been a couple of things that she's done, and it's like, you know, I didn't necessarily like this particular movie, but I liked her in it, mm-hmm. you know? But we definitely talked about High Fidelity. Oh gosh, she was amazing in High Fidelity. Yeah. She was so amazing. And I will say, I'm probably old enough to have watched the John Cusack version, but I have not.
Oh really? Oh, you should watch it.
I haven't. But I will say that after I watched her do High Fidelity, I went back to and tried to read the book.
Oh, okay.
And it's not the same thing. I was like, wait a minute, where's the Zoe sparkle? You know, it's like it's because she wasn't in
that. She brought that to herself. Yeah,
she really did. She's amazing. She's
and
totally
also
amazing.
And her mom's in the original High Fidelity. Lisa Bonet.
Oh, she is. Yeah. I did not know that.
So it's a nice little.
I gotta watch this movie.
Yeah. Her mom's got a really good role in that. She does a really good job in that, and it's a John Cusack classic, right? He's great in that. It's like him just, and he put his, and very much like she put her own stamp on the series, John Cusack right. very much put his own stamp on the movie, because the book set in London, I believe, and mm-hmm. John Cusack's the reason it got moved to Chicago, because he's from there.
Oh wow.
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, that, and she was so good. Taking it back to the Batman, like she's definitely my favorite Catwoman. Like Michelle Pfeiffer is classic, right? You know, but as especially when you compare it to the comics, like nobody has come closer to really grasping those different layers, like you were talking about, the way Zoe Kravitz has, like, and the way she is this, you know, somewhat of a partner, but also somewhat of a foil, which was handled mm-hmm. so much better here than it was in any of the other movies. They kind of touched on that a little bit in, you know, The Dark Knight Rises with Anne Hathaway. They kind of touched on it a little bit in Batman Returns, but still at the same time, she's basically helping the main villain too in those movies. Whereas this, there's none of that in this movie. It's just, you know, she's pursuing them, but she's got her own agenda to pursue them. And it adds a whole new complexity to what's happening in the story.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. And it really kind of makes you see, wow, this character has been under represented in almost just about every way that I've seen, you know, this character. She's just been totally underrepresented. And, you know, the fact that there have been literal movies made just from the Catwoman character, but they haven't even touched on this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling to me. And I'm just like, I can see a Catwoman movie being made.
Oh, yeah.
If she does it.
Yes.
If she does it. Yeah. You know, and if they get, you know, kind of the same, you know, production team and directors and everything. I can see that being done and it not being, you know, a joke like
that
some
was
of the other ones were.
Yeah, that was my first thought walking out. It's like, not the Batman 2, but I want to see the Catwoman movie with Zoe Kravitz.
right, exactly. I'm with you on that. I'm waiting for it.
Now, for me, one of my favorite current superhero romances is, have you watched Superman and Lois at all?
I have not yet.
Okay, so
but
that
yeah,
is...
I've seen kind of the I've seen kind of where they're going with it on some other DC shows, CW shows, but I haven't watched that show yet.
Oh, you got to watch that. That's really good. And one of the things I really like about it is it so much feels like an adult relationship. Like,
yes, I will agree with you on that, because I think what was the last crossover that they did? Infinite Earths.
Oh, Crisis on Infinite Earths. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think they were part of that Crisis on Infinite Earths. And I totally got that feel as well.
Well, yeah, speaking of that, I love how there are these scenes when Elizabeth Tulloch's Lois Lane, whenever she meets these other Supermen, right? When she sees Brandon Routh or when she sees Tom Welling, she's kind of like, oh, wow, look at that guy. Look at how big he
right?
is. And then Tyler Hoechlin's like, really?
Right.
But what I loved about it is there's no petty jealousy about it, right? He doesn't get jealous and like start like, you know, arguing with Brandon Routh or Tom Welling about any of that. Like there's none. He's just more like excited that there are more versions of him in the multiverse.
Right. Right. Exactly. Okay. Yeah.
And on the TV show, there's a lot more of that, because the whole thing is devoted to the whole fact about them being parents and, you know, raising kids and everything like that. And there's this one great scene that I think really summed up when Clark tells her, she asks Clark to do something to be there, and he ends up having to skip it because he's got to do Superman stuff. And he comes back and, you know, he apologizes, like, I'm sorry, you know, I know. And she's like, and she says to him, she's like, look, I know you had to do your Superman thing. I know it's stupid for me to be upset about it, and I understand all that, but I'm still, I just need a minute. Yeah. And that was just such a perfect, because, you know, you see that trope, that's one of the tropes we'll probably talk about, is the fact about the superhero missing out on something because he's got to do superhero stuff, and then the love interest being mad at them for that. And on the one hand, you think, okay, yeah, I kind of get that you're mad that he wasn't where he was supposed to be. But on the other hand, you know, he was saving a bus of school kids. So give the guy a break.
Right.
So I thought that moment was handled so well in that series when she's like, I know you had to do this. I know people's lives were at risk. And I understand all that intellectually, but I'm still mad about it. And I just need a minute. And I thought that was such a perfect way, adult way of handling that situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, with that whole trope of like the superhero and the love interest, who's most of the time not super or not, doesn't have any kind of powers in any way. I think the kind of closest trope for that in romance is, or the closest kind of character trope is the celebrity regular person, you know, kind of mix. And there are several that are out now that are just, you know, it just seems like it's a lot more of them out now. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of that kind of, that whole dynamic between the superhero and the not superhero and you know, as far as romances go. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're done well. Sometimes it's like, what did you do here? wait a minute. This is not, you know, I think the ones that are more so grounded, kind of like you're talking about with Superman and Lois, the ones that are kind of grounded in reality, even though being a superhero is not reality necessarily, mm-hmm. it's kind of grounded in reality. It's those that kind of make the romance part of it cooler. Mm-hmm. It just, it makes it like more authentic, I guess. And you kind of have to have those moments. You yeah. have to have those grounding adult moments to keep readers in the romance story. If you're doing a romance novel with like a celebrity, regular person pairing, you have to have those kind of grounding moments like that where they can relate to them. And the same thing with, you know, with superhero, not superhero, mm-hmm. those little moments, those are the ones that, you know, make me think, wow, yeah. I mean, there really could be a Superman out there, and yeah, there really could be this dynamic going on.
Right, yeah. And you also, it's also strikes me as like having to be a very fine line you have to toe, because you don't want the love interest mm-hmm. to seem unreasonable, even if they've got a good reason to be mad. Because I think
right.
you can push that too far. And I think the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, they did that with Mary Jane. Especially in Spider-Man 3 at the beginning, mm-hmm. Where she's getting very, you know, she's getting these bad reviews, and he's trying to say, look, I understand what you're going through, because I get, you know, I've had people massacring me in the newspaper as Spider-Man and all right. this for years. And she's just being, and she's saying, it's not about you. It's not about you. And
right.
And she's just pushing it too far. And then you're just thinking like, you know, he's trying to help you out here and you're not responding.
Exactly. It's, you know, I think those with those movies and their and that dynamic, it was a little over the top, mm-hmm. kind of. It was yeah. a little, and that's the whole authenticity thing that kind of takes you out
right.
of this being like a real relationship versus this just being something that the superhero is
and
going
I think,
through.
And I think part of that is because of the director, because Sam Raimi is a very over-the-top director, which mm-hmm. works really well mm-hmm. when you're doing something like in the Multiverse of Madness, which he was which he did amazing with. Or if you're doing like, you know, Drag Me to Hell or the Evil Dead movies, right? Being over the top right. works great there. But when you're trying to portray a romance and have it be like this slice of verisimilitude in the movie, and you're trying to be over the top of it, it doesn't work so well then.
Right, exactly. And it's, you know, it's kind of funny because like the Spider-Man movies now with, you know, Spider-Man and MJ and, mm-hmm. you know, what's happening there, although I haven't seen the last one yet.
Oh, you got to see that.
Oh gosh, yeah. I'm like dying to see this last movie. I'm like, you know, but COVID has really scared the bejesus out of me, so mm. I haven't been theater anything, and you know, so
it should be it's for rent now because I picked it up on iTunes.
Oh good, yeah, good, I'm glad. Okay, I'm gonna see it,
yeah,
yeah. very soon.
But speaking of Spider-Man, the I actually want to mention this because I thought another romance that was handled really well was in the Amazing Spider-Man movies with Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone.
Yes.
That was just like pitch perfect chemistry. Right.
Yes.
Like that just it just like sizzled on the screen watching the two of them together, which is yeah. which is why you could see why the two of them ended up dating in real life, because they had such perfect chemistry there.
They did. I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, I actually think that's kind of part of the whole thing is that chemistry on screen, it has to, I mean, that chemistry on screen, maybe even off screen too, the chemistry between the actors has to be there because the actors are doing these outlandish things. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, Spider-Man's, you know, swinging around and climbing on buildings and all right. this other kind of stuff. So you have to have those, that That's part of the whole, I think, grounding part.
Yeah.
If you don't have it in story, at least have that chemistry between characters happen so we can kind of feel it through the screen, in other words.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what makes those things sing. And then the newer Spider-Man, I think that's what makes them those two come together and that whole relationship thing is that chemistry.
Yeah.
You know.
So let's talk about some of those tropes. Like, what are some of the tropes of romance that you think are handled really well in superhero stories and ones that maybe not so well?
I'm going to say my first one, maybe that was done, I think, not so well, is that whole love triangle kind of a trope. Right now, it's not a very popular trope. A lot of, if you go to some, you know, very famous search engine book places, which will not be named, and type in love triangle romance, you're going to get a lot of love triangle romances that are indie, that are under, that are kind of, you've never heard of these authors before. There are a lot of romance indie authors out there who are very well known, and a lot of them are not doing love triangles right now. They used to be really big when I was a kid. I don't know why, not so much now. But one, and maybe it's because they're, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. Somebody's going to be, if there's a happily ever after, somebody's going to be left out in the cold in a love triangle.
Yeah.
Unless you got some kind of alternate, you know, something going on.
Right.
An alternate lifestyle. But somebody's going to be kind of left out in cold. So it's kind of that whole, the love triangle thing kind of is one of those tropes that it kind of doesn't work right now. And it doesn't really work in the comics either. And the main one I'm thinking about is the whole Wolverine, Jean Grey, you know, Scott Cyclops. Summers, Cyclops, you know, love triangle kind of thing that happens, you know, that in the movies it was just not done well.
Right.
And to top it off, having Rogue be kind of have this crush on Wolverine in the very beginning in that first X-Men, and maybe even the second one,
there was obviously some sort of idolation for towards him or something like that. Yeah,
exactly. And so it's like, to have that be on top of it, I'm like, this is just not done well. I don't.
One of the big problems with is also that just Cyclops in those movies was so underwritten, right? His character was just
very much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think if you're going to have a love triangle to make it interesting, you have to have all sides of that triangle be very well developed characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was underwritten and on top of that, he did not come off very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember him being this cocky jerk from the cartoon. I just don't remember that. He wasn't my favorite character ever, but he just really did not come off well in those movies. So it makes him unlikable as like a romantic hero. You've got Wolverine who basically is running the show because we're following his story to the X-Men, you know? So it's like, well, he should get everything he wants.
Right.
Which includes Jean Grey. But that's not what happens. And we know that that's not what happens, you know? But it's, you know, when you see that kind of dynamic, and for him to be underwritten and maybe written poorly, it just, it makes that whole love triangle thing exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that trope.
All right. So what are some other tropes? Or, well, speaking of the love triangle thing, another one I want to talk about is I think this is probably specific to superhero movies or superhero stories in general, where the love triangle is the love interest and the superhero and their civilian identity. So the whole Lois Clark Superman dynamic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. That's another one that I think has gotten kind of played out.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of gotten played out. And I will say there is one romance novel right now, that I'm actually reading right now that kind of does a little bit of that. The hero and heroine, they have online profiles.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know that they're each other. They don't know who each other really is. So, and the hero is actually also a famous person. So it's a celebrity, regular person romance, which to me is kind of comparable to the superhero, you know, regular love mm-hmm. interest. But they also have these kind of secret identities going on where, you know, even though the heroine is a fan and likes the hero, you know, doesn't necessarily like what they're doing as far as their identity online.
Right.
The name of that book is Spoiler Alert by Olivia Dade.
Okay.
But you're right. It, you know, that's very rarely done. And I, you know, for romance, that's almost never done. Mm-hmm. But, as far as superheroes go, yeah, it's kind of like played out, because to me, if a hero and heroine are going to get together, or a superhero and a love interest is going to get together at some point, because we see it, and it's kind of, it's very thinly veiled a lot mm-hmm. of times that this person is, you know, also this alternate superhero personality. And so, you know, for these people to supposedly be in love or supposed to be together, it's like, you should know some of this, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And so it, and that's, and I think that's kind of why it's a little played out, because the shenanigans that the superhero has to do to conceal their identity, you know, kind of become a little bit unbelievable, right?
Right.
And so
yeah.
And so if the love interest is this close to this person, then they should know.
Yeah, yeah. And also it's something that has a shelf life, because I remember, yes. Did you watch Lois and Clark back in the day?
Yes, I did. Yes, that's like I love that show.
That's like the perfect example I can think of, because you have the whole premise of the show was all hung on the romance aspect. Right. Yes. And so it's this idea of, like, you know, it's a love triangle between Lois Clark and Superman. That was the whole driving right. point of the show. And as soon as Lois finds out Clark and Superman are the same person, then all of that drama suddenly is gone from the show. And mm-hmm. and then they had to come out with increasingly, like you were saying, like increasingly outlandish reasons to keep things mm-hmm. going. Like Lois yep. was replaced by her clone at one point, and then she had amnesia, and like all kind of nonsense like that.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. You know, they did a little bit of that on the Wonder Woman live action show. They did a little bit of that kind of in the beginning, where, you know, Wonder Woman and, you know, Steven mm-hmm. Trainer. Trevor. So, you know, we're kind of like, they weren't together, and, you know, it's like, okay, Wonder Woman is, you know, it's so, but that was campy, right?
Right.
You know, and so to a certain extent, if you do it campy, you can kind of pull off a few things that you cannot do on something. Even with that Lois and Clark show, it was a little bit on the camp side, but it wasn't, you right. know, it was drama to at least to me, it was dramatic. It was drama. It had a little bit of camp, but mm-hmm. it wasn't straight campy, like, you know, like Wonder Woman was.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, it just becomes, you're right, it just becomes outlandish, and it becomes harder and harder to do that whole love triangle when one person is really two people. Mm-hmm.
Which is why I think a lot of the modern adaptations of Superman, they've shied away from that a lot, if you notice. Yes. Like in yeah. Smallville, you know, they Lois did. Finds yeah. out that, you know, Clark has superpowers before he even becomes Superman.
Right.
In the Man of Steel series, right, she knows she finds out he's Superman right away. So there's no, like, you know, love triangle there at all. And I thought in Superman and Lois handled it a really well way, because although he's keeping a secret from her at first, she doesn't go gaga for Superman. Like, she's just actually kind of suspicious about Superman, but she's more attracted to Clark Kent, actually. Mm-hmm. And so they okay. have a totally different spin on it, where she's much more attracted to the man as opposed to Superman.
Yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
You're just making this show even better.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
I've just got to tune in.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, oh, you know, and even kind of just the whole, I think, superhero regular person trope in mm-hmm. general, and its romance equivalent, the celebrity regular person kind of trope. I think that whole trope, that's probably the biggest trope and the biggest similarity between the two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think there are a lot of instances where that is done really well. And, you know, you're mentioning Superman and Lois, that whole mm-hmm. Kind of dynamic. I think that's done really well. I liked Iron Man and Pepper Potts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that the way that was done. I was on the fence about Thor and Jane.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the fence about them. And I think that that's partly because I'm on the fence about Natalie Portman. I don't know why. Not sure why. But now that I've seen the trailer for the new
mm-hmm. Thor, Love and Thunder, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, this is going to be nice. I'm like, okay, I think I've got kind of a renewed interest here. I really want to see how this works out. But yeah, I think that trope, or, you know, that trope and the romance equivalent of that trope, I think that's probably done the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has a lot of good examples.
So what do you think about the opposite of that trope when it's two superheroes getting together? So, for example, in the comics a few years back, it was Superman and Wonder Woman. You had Black mm-hmm. Panther and Storm getting married in the comics
right.
A few years back. Batman and Catwoman obviously isn't the most famous one. What do you think of that trope and compared to the superhero and the normal person?
So to me, that trope falls more under, for me as an author, it falls more under a women's fiction kind of trope.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that, and not necessarily trope, but it falls more under a women's fiction kind of story. And the reason why I say that is because in a lot of those instances, if you'll notice, there's always tension, there's always issues, there are always, like, getting together, breaking up, getting mm-hmm. together, breaking up kind of thing. I will say this, when Black Panther came out, of course, I did a little research because, you know, I knew about Black Panther, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, we're getting into his world. You know, we're actually going to Wakanda, and I wanted mm-hmm. to know everything that I could possibly know. And before that movie came out, that's when I found out that he and Storm were married.
Mm-hmm.
And did they get divorced in the comics?
I think it got annulled, is how it
annulled.
Worked out. Yeah,
okay.
Because there was yeah. the, it was Something during happened. The It was okay. during the X-Men, Avengers versus X-Men event. And that's when they had like this hard split at that point.
Okay, yeah. So, but of course at the time, Black Panther, was MCU, and of course X-Men is Fox, and Fox had not, you know, done that deal with Marvel, Disney, whoever they are now.
Right.
And you know, we weren't all, like, you know, wonderfully excited about that. So I was a little bit disappointed kind of going into Black Panther as far as that goes. Wasn't disappointed about anything else about Black Panther. I will just say that is like one of those once in a lifetime wonderful watershed moments. I went to the theater, saw it twice. That's the only movie, that's the only Marvel movie that I've done that with.
Okay.
And I just, it was just amazing. But that was the one little nugget that I was like, oh gosh, you know, because of course, you know, he has this kind of burgeoning love interest thing. And it's like, well, it's not with Storm. So I want to see. And plus, you know, I'm like I said, I grew up on X-Men. And Storm is just like one of my favorite characters. You know, she is my favorite. She was my favorite character kind of going in there. As far as love interest and as far as relatability, I love Rogue and Rogue and Gambit. But as far as a solo character, Storm was it for me. A lot of that was about representation, but you know, she was everything. And I was like, Storm and Black Panther getting together, this has got to, I mean, I've got to see this on screen, you know? And so I was, you know, I was a little bit disappointed with that, but I'm, you know, I'm kind of like excited for that. But in general, like the whole two superheroes kind of getting together, it's almost for us romance authors, it's almost like two alphas coming together, and that's not gonna work.
Right, right.
Two alphas coming together is not gonna work because they're both controlling. They both want things their own way. There's gonna be problems, and more often than not, there's not an HEA. So if it's not an HEA, it's not a romance. If it's not a happily ever after, it's not a romance. And so that's why I put that more as a women's fiction kind of thing, because women's fiction is very much about character emotional arcs and characters being in one place in the beginning and then having these series of events and things happen where they end up in an emotional other place. And that other place may not have a happily ever after. And so that's why I feel like that's more of a women's fiction kind of thing. It's more of a relationship. In other words, some people say relationship fiction, but that falls under women's fiction. And it's because of all the kind of issues that go on between superheroes that kind of get in the way of keeping that happily ever after together. You know, or just it's just holding on by a thread kind of thing. I you know, I like that dynamic, of course, but you know, as for the romance part of me, it's not as kind of juicy. But it's very much a real thing. It's like real life, you know? It's kind of like these people have issues. They have powers and they have issues. It's like, dog, if I had powers, I'm still going to have issues. But hey, I can relate to this, you know? you know, some other ones that kind of come to mind that, that I kind of think about, and I'm, you know, it's not necessarily done in the movie. Well, yeah, it's kind of done in the movies, but like the whole Fantastic Four, Invisible Woman, Mr. Fantastic, kind of that, those kind of issues happening. You know, obviously the Batman Catwoman thing, you know, being the most famous, those kind of issues happening. Again, I'm all about, you know, seeing Storm and Black Panther. I actually want to see that happen. I want to see that happen. I want to see I actually want to see a HEA. We need to go away from the comic. Let's not have that marriage annulled. I want to see an HEA for that one.
Well, unfortunately, it may not get in a movie for a while now that Chadwick's gone. But
exactly, and you know, you know, as far as and
although there
the
is
way a, they're there... going for that, they're actually what. Trying to do a female Black
Panther. I believe. Yeah. I mean, nothing's been confirmed yet, and Letitia Wright has all that anti-vax stuff coming out about her now, so who knows what's going to happen with her.
Right.
But exactly. But if they do a female Black Panther, they could still do Storm and Black Panther, because you may not know this, but Storm is actually bisexual.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah,
oh gosh, that would be so awesome.
in the 80s X-Men books, she went punk. Right? She went full on punk, and that was because, had the mohawk and everything. And one of the things is she had this did you see the Wolverine movie?
Yes, I did.
The one in Japan?
I think so.
Okay, so Yukio.
I think I did, yeah.
So Yukio from that movie, the one with the colored hair.
Uh-huh.
The character from the comics, and she's very much kind of like this this freewheeling mercenary type of character, right? Very much kind of like live fast, die young character. And obviously, originally, this friendship / relationship with Wolverine, but then she became acquainted with Storm in the 80s in the X-Men books, and they had there was some very strong subtext going on there. And I think the comics have finally confirmed that she is in fact bisexual.
And you bring this up, and this kind of diverges a little bit from tropes, but I did want to kind of talk about like that, the whole representation, whole LGBTQIA plus representation, and how that's making, especially even from the indie romance author perspective, that's kind of where you see a lot of that happening. And, it's becoming a thing, it's becoming, more prevalent. I wouldn't necessarily say a thing that makes it sound like a fad, which it's not. Mm-hmm. It's about being represented. And it's one of those places that up until now was underrepresented, I felt. In romance, underrepresented
stuff, in fiction, absolutely.
Right? And that's what I was gonna say. And it's also very much underrepresented in superhero stuff, because you have if a superhero character is male, he's very male, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, and that's why I say when two superheroes get together, it's very alpha, right? Because they both have kind of very stereotypical, male kind of, whatever. And then, if there's a character that's female, it's very, she's has at least some kind of sexualized, whatever. It's stereotypical sexualized, very female. So there's, and then when they get together, it's been male getting together with female, always heterosexual kind of couples there in the big movies, the big TV shows. And I'm assuming also in the comics, but it sounds like in the comics that they're making that turn as well.
There's been traditionally, that's also been the case. There's been some, because they weren't allowed to, come out and be explicit about stuff.
Yeah.
But there were hints of stuff in some of the, mostly I come from X-Men background in the comics. That's where I'm most familiar with. But there was definitely some hints, like Storm and Yukio was one obvious one. Another one was Mystique and Destiny. And in fact, not only LGBTQ, but especially, but trans as well, because, in the comics, Mystique is Nightcrawler's mother. What Chris Claremont's original idea was is that Mystique and Destiny were going to be Nightcrawler's parents, and Mystique was going to have the ability, because of her shapeshifting, to switch genders. So Mystique was intended to be a trans character, was what his original intention for her was.
Wow, cool. And see, and if anywhere that you could do that, it would be in a superhero comic.
Yeah.
you know, because there's this, you know, and, you know, me being a Trekkie, you know, there's a lot of that, a lot of, what do they call it? Flashback, that happens. And that's where you see a lot of, up until Star Trek, I guess Star Trek Discovery, there's a married male, gay male married couple on Star Trek Discovery. But up until then, and Star Trek Discovery's only been out for what, 3-4 years?
Yeah, and I think also the Star Trek Into Darkness, I think they established that Sulu in that has a husband.
Right. Yes, yeah. They did say that in Into Darkness. And you know, but up until then, it's just been, you know, up until kind of very recently.
Right.
It's been very heteronormative, very, you know, gender specific, you know, male, female. And I'm thinking, you have people that have powers, you have people from other planet, or, you know, humanoids from other planets, you have, you know, people that can do different things, shapeshift, all of these kinds of things, and you haven't, as much as you explore the human condition, because that's really, like you were saying, you know, comics are soap operas,
right?
A lot of times. And that's because, and romances do this well, is because, you know, it's, you can explore the human condition with the soap opera.
Right.
You know, you can, and with, you know, and sci-fi as well, you know, Star Trek as well. I mean, it's really all about the human condition and about things that humans struggle with, but they can't seem to get past, because they can't seem to see past it. Right. So why not do a superhero version of this, where we just take this out of Earth, we take this out of whatever, or we just, you know, make an alternate Earth or an alternate universe, and, you know, we deal with this. And for them to have that blind side, that LGBTQIA plus blind side, is up until now is amazing to me.
Right.
So even if that happens, a Black Panther Storm connection, and they're both went, oh yeah, I'm down for that.
All right, one last trope I wanted to talk about was about the idea of fridging, you know, the whole women in refrigerators trope. Do you know what, you know about this?
I do not know about this.
Okay. Explain. So this is a trope that comes from superhero fiction, from the comic books, and it was coined by Gail Simone, who's a comic book writer herself. And the name comes from back in the early 90s, the Green Lantern, one of his villains killed Green Lantern's girlfriend and stuffed her body in his refrigerator. And the whole idea, and so that was the name of the trope, women in refrigerators, fridging as the shorthand for it. And it's been used to describe any time the woman in the superhero's life ends up being killed or maimed or something in order to motivate the hero to action.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you could see this. I mean, this is obviously an extension of the damsel in distress trope, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's so frowned upon right now in romance, that whole damsel in distress, the whole rescue thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie, I write it all the time. For me, and I will say this, it's just kind of personal for me. For me, the whole damsel in distress thing, for me, is a little bit of kind of escapism for me. You know, I am a Black woman in America, and a lot of what we deal with is the whole stereotype that we are independent, that we are super women, that we can do it all of ourselves.
Right.
But no, we are not superheroes. Even though I love a superhero, I am not one. And so it would be nice to have that moment where I could just, you know, if things get to me, I could be rescued.
That's a good point. You know? I never really considered it that way. That's a very good point. Yeah.
I'm kind of all about that, but I would not want to be killed just to motivate a superhero. So, you know, the other side of that, kind of the martyr kind of side of that, for on the superhero side of things, it's a good character as far as a woman's fiction kind of novel goes. It's a good character thing. It's done all the time. Mm-hmm. You will see that happen, that whole trope happen often. A character has had a serious death in the family and they have to figure out how to get over that, you know, or how to move on, what the family dynamic is going to be after that, who they are after that. You know, it's not necessarily a romance trope. It's very much a women's fiction kind of theme in as far as parallels go.
Okay.
But the damsel in distress is very much a romance trope, and it's very polarizing.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I feel ambivalent about it, to be honest. As far as superheroes go, you understand why they have to do it. You understand kind of what they're trying to do. But I would say not at the expense of their love interest.
Yeah, yeah.
Which a lot of times is a woman, you know, it's a lot of, which is, you know, that whole thing. It's a lot of times it's a woman and it's a male superhero and that's how he's got to kind of deal with things. And, you know, it's not just putting the woman in a bad light. It's like, wow, this is what this man has to go through to kind of be this superhero, you know?
That's right, right. Yeah, yeah.
Kind of weak, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think to mention the Amazing Spider-Man movies again, because obviously they had Gwen Stacy dying in the second one, but one of the things I think they did well is she has a lot of agency up until that point, right? She's helping him in both movies, like try and find the solution to stop the villain. I think that really helps the whole damsel in distress thing go down a lot easier when obviously, you know, if she's going to be in danger, she's going to need the superhero to come save her. But having her do something and have some contribution, I think makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And I think the one area where it's most poignant, but it's probably the worst representation of it is in, I can't remember which Christopher Reeve Spider-Man it is, but it's the one where Lois is, it's Superman. Yeah. Did I say Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Sorry. Superman. It's late here.
It's okay.
in one of the Christopher Reeves Supermans, the one where, you know, Lois is crushed in the car and he, you know,
reverses time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the first movie.
The first one. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So long ago. But for me, that it's almost like she was just an accessory, but she was enough of an accessory for him to, you know, so part of me is like, he loves her that much to go, you know, reverse time so that she can live. Right. But at the same time, it's like, why did we do this? You know, it's fraught. I'm, you know, that's one of those tropes that is just, for me, it's just really fraught. There's some.
And that death scene, actually, in Superman the movie, that death scene is actually pretty gruesome. Like,
it is. It is. I mean, very gruesome. Yeah. you know, for it to be, you know, those movies were, you know, supposed to be family movies and, you know, and of course, you know, it's back in the day where, you know, the threshold is lower. If something right. is PG-13 or PG, which I think that one was PG, I think.
That was PG, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. For something to be PG, that was really PG, you know. Yeah. And for that to happen in a family PG movie, yeah, that was very gruesome,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
for that to happen. Yeah, you're right. It's fraught. It's yeah. very fraught. But then, and then when it's done well, you're right. The damsel that's in distress can get herself out of distress until she really can't.
Right.
And you're really like rooting for, you know, the superhero to come in and save her. Mm-hmm. But because you already have this feeling of she can, you know, she can do almost anything.
Right.
You know, right. herself. And so when it's done well, we respect the love interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, before that damsel in distress moment happens.
Yeah.
When it's not done well, like Superman the movie, it's like Lois almost seems weak there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like she's just riding in a car, you know.
And it undermines a lot, especially a character like Lois Lane, who's such a strong character in
she
general.
Is,
and
exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like she's a strong character. And even in that particular movie, she tries to portray that she is, mm-hmm. right? By being kind of a loud, you know, I'm a loud New Yorker. I'm, you know, I'm kind of boisterous, right? You know, Metropolis. Excuse me, Metropolis.
I mean, that was basically New York, though, in that movie.
Yeah, right, exactly. It was New York. So, you know, she's trying to be that, but that whole scene just undermines everything. And it's
right,
because
right.
that scene is so powerful, it undermines everything that she is in that moment.
Yeah.
And so she loses all that agency. So I think, you know, when it's done right, it can be very romantic,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you're respecting and you're rooting for these people and it works. When it's not done right, it just feels like this love interest is just an obstacle to get the superhero to the next place,
right?
Right? To be a better superhero or to be a superhero, go from being trouble to being a superhero, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And getting that agency.
Okay. This has been a great conversation. This has been a lot of fun. So do you
this
have any-
has been fun.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
so excited.
do you have any final things you wanted to say about romance and superhero stories?
I just want to say that they're a lot alike.
They are, yeah.
And that, you know, you shouldn't dismiss them out of hand. There's something about having that romance element in a superhero movie and a superhero story that just kind of, it just kind of brings that realness and it just brings that, you know, something. It just brings mm-hmm. that personality to everything.
Right.
You know, and then there's some relationships in superhero movies and superhero stories that, you know, you could see a romance happening,
mm-hmm.
but romance doesn't necessarily happen. Now, it may happen in the comics, but doesn't necessarily happen on screen.
Right.
I'm thinking about a Thor Valkyrie kind of moment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And those kinds of things, they just sizzle when they mm-hmm. work. Because it's really all about relationships. Mm-hmm. And it's all about relationships and about connecting to that character.
Well, Wyam, thanks so much for coming on the show. This has been a fun discussion. Do you want to plug anything before you leave?
Well, right now, I do have, actually, if you're signing up for my newsletter on ymnelson.com/subscribe, you will get a copy of Stardate, which is my Star Trek geek romance.
Oh, nice.
yeah, so... just go to ymnelson.com/subscribe and you can get a copy of that for free.
Okay, great. Well, thanks again for coming on. It's been a lot of fun. And anytime you want to come back on, we'll talk about a movie next time, maybe.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm all for it.
Awesome. Okay. That does it for this episode of Superhero Cinephiles. SuperheroCinephiles.com is the website, and we are Super Cinema Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and of course, the Superhero Cinephiles group on Facebook. Please make sure to like and subscribe and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your podcasts. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. If you enjoy the Superhero Cinephiles, then you'll also love my companion podcast, the Superhero Cinephiles Book Club. All my Patreon subscribers get access to this exclusive podcast where I review superhero comics and graphic novels. Not sure what comics you want to read next or what you should dive into? I've got you covered on that. I'll be doing reviews, recommendations, and also talking to you about useful entry points if you're interested in reading some comics but don't know where you should start. Plus, you get access to all episodes of the main show a week before everyone else. On all of this for as little as just $1 a month. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/supercinemapod and you can sign up at any subscription amount to get started. Thanks so much for your support, and please don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening. And as always, good night, good evening, God bless.